happy to announce that the Fretboard Journal now has three presenting sponsors. These are three brands that are behind us with everything that we do, including the podcasts and the videos, and they include Carter Vintage. Carter Vintage Guitars, where guitar lovers go for a good time. Gibson Guitars, only a Gibson is good enough. And last but not least, Martin Guitars. Martin Guitars and Strings remain the choice for musicians around the world for their unrivaled quality, craftsmanship, and tone. Can't thank these three brands enough for being presenting sponsors. Thank you, guys. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I'm Jason Verlinde, the founder of the Fretboard Journal magazine. As always, that's John Rauhaus playing in the background. As we wind down 2019, I just want to thank you all for tuning in to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I also want to thank you for giving the Truth About Vintage Amps podcast a try. That's the podcast I co-host with Skip Simmons every 2 weeks, where we field all your questions about guitar amplifiers and guitar amp repair. We're also sharing recipes and talking about the merits of various cast iron pans and all sorts of other nonsense. So tune into that if you haven't yet. And then last but not least, thank you for tuning in to the Luthier on Luthier podcast, where we do a deep dive with a guitar maker from somewhere around the world every month. That has been such an enlightening and fun podcast to be a part of. Tune into all that stuff. It's available on Spotify and Stitcher, Google Play and Apple Podcasts, and wherever you found this podcast. For 10 years now, I've been doing this podcast. I've tried to talk to a wide array of players and guitar makers. I've tried to have fun with it, and this week's guest is no exception. Russell Winfield is a professional snowboarder, perhaps arguably the very first African-American professional snowboarder that was ever on this earth. He lives near us here in the Seattle area of Washington State, and I've been following this guy for a while. I knew a little bit about his story. He's been in magazines. He's been in movies. He's competed all around the continent. And what struck me was I started seeing a lot of photos of him, not just with a snowboard, but with a guitar. Turns out Russell is now a Bedell sponsored artist. He is in a band called Shout the People. His backstory is truly amazing. Everything this guy does, he's so talented. He just seems to like excel at, whether that's snowboarding or golf or selling stuff or playing guitar. It was interesting to hear his story. It's interesting to hear how when a bunch of snowboard friends and who are competing get together and have to cram into a van, one of the things they do to distract themselves between journeys is play guitar. How cool is that? So hope you enjoy it. Snow may be falling wherever you are listening to this. I know it is sort of near us, about an hour away, and I'll probably be hitting the slopes this holiday break. What else can I tell you? The Fretboard Journal 45 is mailing to all of our subscribers right now. I know it's taken us a while. This issue was filled with so much stuff, and there were so many moving pieces. It took us a little longer than anticipated, but it's mailing to everybody right now. If you haven't subscribed yet, you certainly can and start off with this issue. You can also get a digital subscription to the Fretboard Journal and get the issue pretty much immediately in your inbox as a PDF. As always, Fretboard Journal subscriptions are $44 for 4 issues, $80 for 8 issues, and we still have that 12 issue for $99 deal. We are reader-supported magazine, so every subscription matters to us. There is it's sort of the only way we're able to produce a magazine of this quality with so few ads, which is by design. We want to make sure you get all the meaty content you can. We are going to be taking a little break probably right around the first of the year for a week or so, and then you're going to hear from me again, and we are going to be telling you all about the Fretboard Journal's second electric guitar annual that will be coming out. You can pre-order that by going to fretboardjournal.com and clicking on the shop and then downloads page. You'll be able to see the information for that. We're taking pre-orders on that right now. Before we get to Russell, I'm going to give a shout out to a couple of our sponsors. First up is Monocreators.com is where you go to read up on all the amazing things Mono is doing. They have gig bags, they have pedal bags, they have pedal boards, they have so much going on, and then they have all these sister brands like Tysco and Harmony that are up to so much cool stuff. NAMM is right around the corner. I'm going to be learning about all of their latest and greatest products down in Southern California in mid-January. can't say enough great things about these guys. They have such a cool vision and are putting out so many great products. Go to monocreators.com. Our other sponsor is, of course, Retrofret Vintage Guitars over in New York City. Every week on this podcast, I try to highlight a couple of cool listings on the Retrofret site. I think by the time you hear this, pretty much everything I'm going to mention will have probably been sold, but I will tell you right now, there's a gorgeous Cherry 62 ES335 Gibson on their site that you should check out, and a lot more. Go on over there. Honestly, even if you're not in the market for a guitar, they are so good at writing descriptions on instruments. You're going to learn something just by poking around and seeing what looks pretty and learning about it. They also do amazing repair and restoration work, so you can send them your guitar wherever you are and know that it's going to be taken care of. That is all of my announcements. Russell Winfield, again, thank you for being on the podcast. I hope you enjoy this. Thanks for all the great feedback. Keep leaving us reviews. And if I don't speak to you before, then have a very happy new year. So, Russell, thanks for coming to the Fretboard Journal.
Thank you.
I don't know if we were on your radar, but you were on my radar. So, sweet.
Yeah, I saw your stuff on the gram. It's pretty much where you see everything these days.
Yeah. So I was intrigued. I heard you on another podcast. I heard you on that Powell Movement Action Sports podcast.
Yeah.
And we can go through your entire trajectory as a professional snowboarder and athlete. But it sounds like music was kind of like along the way the entire time.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's always been, since before I was born, my mother was a gospel singer.
Okay.
And she finally got her big break. And got pregnant with me.
So, what was the big break?
She was like, I don't know who it was, but one of the big gospel, traveling gospel groups that travels the world, like, finally gave her the thumbs up.
Oh, man.
She's from North Carolina, so it was one of those ones down there.
Yeah.
And she got pregnant with me, and that was that.
All right.
But she sang around the house always.
Yeah.
And, like, for me, my first real music, and this is kind of, you know, it's not embarrassing to me, but some people are going to think it's embarrassing, was like Chuck Mangione.
Sure.
Like the Land of Make-Believe with there was some black lady sing so sweet, and that was, and so then after that, obviously growing up in New York during the hip-hop era, and like all the lyricists.
So wait, where did you grow up?
I grew up in a town called Rye, New York.
Okay. Which is what,
like? Westchester County. It's the same town that the Bushes are from.
All right.
Just to give you a little
living large.
Well, no, I was a poor kid. I mean, relatively so.
Yeah.
But I was good at sports, so that helped. Played a little bit of music. You know, I sang in a band when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Like a hippie band, because that's kind of what it was. And then all the hip-hop stuff kind of hit. And I always loved writing. Like, I love to just write, like, stories, poetry, whatever. I remember in my snowboard career, like, everybody would freestyle. And so I was working with this company called Alphanumeric, which was really big, like, had really big hip-hop ties. And one of the graphic designer dudes was like, you know, you're horrible at writing rap stuff, but I bet you'd be real good at writing like folk and rock and roll shit. And I was so upset with him back then.
Foreshadowing.
You know? Yeah, I was like, fuck you. I mean, cool, but fuck you. And here I am, you know, 20 years later, kind of doing it.
Doing just that?
Doing just that.
So you grew up, were you in the city a lot?
I went to high school in the city.
Okay.
I used to go at the Twin Towers every Tuesday. There was this contemporary jazz like station called City 101.9, and they'd put on free shows.
Yeah.
So every Tuesday, you go see like Stanley Clark, Pat Metheny, like gnarly, gnarly musicians for free.
Yeah.
And I was always just so intrigued, and I just never really, you know, I was snowboarding and doing all that, so I never really did anything with it. And then about 10 years ago, we were on an RV trip, like me and Jamie Lynn, and just a bunch of us. And when he travels like he's, you know, in a grunge band. He's got like 15 guitars, and he's just got the whole kit.
All right. He's into it.
Oh, he's super, he's, you know, he's really, really into it. And so we're in the RV, and I just started playing. And he's like, "Russell, you've been playing?" And I was like, "No," because I didn't know how to put my hands on, you know, like,
yeah.
I knew nothing, and I just kind of watched him for a little bit, and like the bar chord, and was like, "All right." And he's kind of just moving around, so I kind of figured some stuff out. And he's like, "Well, shit, you should start playing. You should figure this out." And then we got home like 2 weeks later, and he shows up at my house with like this super old Les Paul gold top and a super old Jazzmaster.
Yeah.
And then this, I can't remember, some crazy Marshall amp probably, knowing Jamie.
Okay.
Sets them all up and looks at me and goes, "You're either going to be a Fender guy or a Gibson guy. I'll be back in a week." And like, I was so scared of the gold top because I knew how expensive that thing was.
Sure.
That I kind of played it and I was like, eh, meh. Yeah. And I ended up really liking the Jazzmaster. So that was kind of my entry into it. And I've just played, you know, almost every day since.
Were you taking lessons or are you?
I've taken one lesson.
Okay.
In my life from Mark Yalowitz.
Okay.
Which is the, he's like a gnarly guitar player. He's in a, big punk rock band.
Okay.
But he went to that school in LA in the 80s, whatever the, you know. But yeah, I've taken one and I don't really even know what I'm doing. I kind of just feel my way through it.
Yeah. So what, Jamie, does he record too or is he just
a pro snorer? He had his band called Candy Coated for years.
Okay.
And they traveled the world and whatever. But he's, you know, he's one of the most legendary snowboarders ever.
Yeah. Where is he based?
Auburn.
Auburn, Washington?
Yes, sir.
All right. Not far from you.
Nope.
Or us.
No.
So what years were you, like, what the prime snowboard years? What are we talking about?
90, like the 90s, 90s to 2000.
Yeah.
Really.
So when you were talking about it being exposed to music and hip hop in New York, you're talking like late 80s?
Late 80s. Like I went in New York in the 80s when I was in high school. It wasn't like you could go to the club.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't ID. It was like who you know.
Yeah.
And how you're dressed. And so there's a BDP, Boogie Down Productions album called Worldwide Hip Hop or something.
Okay.
And I was at the show at the, I can't remember which one it was, but I was there for that recording.
Yeah.
Didn't know it till like 4 years later when I saw this album. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
You know, so it was like all this and it was just a really crazy time in music. It was the beginning of the whole electronic, like the rave scene and it was crazy. And the Wu-Tang and just everything.
Just
New York hip hop back then was it. And it was about storytelling.
Yeah. And you were, this was kind of before you went pro. So were you just this artsy kid in Manhattan going to high school? Or?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Did you get exposed to, I imagine at that time, like a lot of the guitar bass, like Sonic Youth and everything were everywhere?
Yeah.
Or was it all hip hop for you?
It was hip hop and oddly enough, the Grateful Dead.
Okay.
Which is, I know it's weird, man, but like, that's just kind of me. I'm like, I'm on either side of the spectrum.
Yeah. A lot of shows, a lot of Dead shows.
Yep. When I was younger, I was super into them. When I was like 14, 15, and I ran away from home when I was 15.
Okay.
And went on summer East Coast tour. And I remember it was like the end of the tour was Portland, Maine, after the last show. And I was walking around in the parking lot. It was like 5, whenever, sun was coming up. And I look over, and there's like 4 or 5 little kids. Like probably 3 to 5 years old, just up playing in a puddle. And that was it for me. I was like, I'm tapping out. Like, I'm good. Like, this isn't what I, nope. And I was like, eh.
Seeing the kids was just a breaking point?
It was just a breaking point for me. Like, I still loved and still do love the music and the talent that all those guys possess. But like that whole scene was just, that was just a really heavy moment for me. Maybe it was like mushrooms. I don't know. It was a culmination of a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Interesting.
And I haven't been back to a Dead show since.
Yeah.
That's a lie. I think I went to one more in Madison Square Garden or something.
Yeah.
But I wasn't going to see multiple shows and travel. No, I'm good.
That's wild. That's a wild breaking point.
It was just like, it was like the whole thing, like the sun was coming up and there was just stuff, shit everywhere, you know, like after a dead show in the 80s, it's just mayhem and a mess. And like the thing that I focus in on is like these little white kids just covered in dirt with hardly any clothes on playing in a puddle.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm good.
Wow.
I'm good.
Wake up call.
Yeah. Like, I don't want these to be my kids. And, you know, I don't know if I was consciously thinking that.
Yeah.
But, like, I must have something.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm good.
So, when you were a pro snowboarder and, like, going to, you did competitions. We're talking, like, freestyle snowboarding, right?
Yep. And then movies. And the music I did there was mostly, I spun a lot of records.
Okay.
A lot of, like, Rare Grooves jazz.
Okay.
Like, Gray Boy, Andreas Stevens. Lived in San Diego, and he was a good buddy of mine, and he had the Gray Boy All-Stars.
So,
like, Carl and Zach back then, and Elgin and Robert, and all them dudes. Like, I spent a lot of time with them.
Okay.
So.
And that would, you'd be spinning records at, like, tournaments and stuff, or just in general? Just,
well, I lived in Vail, so I had a night in Vail.
Okay.
And I always had to set up at the house, and, like.
Yeah.
It's just the evolution of my music, I guess.
Yeah. I'm fucking and what are you doing these days?
Selling cars, doing branding, raising children, playing golf, trying to stay out of the way.
Playing guitar. So, let's get into it. So, you have a band?
I do have a band.
What's the band called?
The band is called Shout the People.
All right. Are these all snowboarders?
Yes.
Okay.
Of some sort.
Okay.
But we're not. It's so atypical. It's like, we're not a snowboard band, but... You know.
So where do you play?
We play... The problem with the band is that we are scattered literally around the globe.
Okay, that is a problem.
It's a problem.
Yeah.
Mike LeBlanc plays lead guitar. Chris Coyle plays drums. I sing and play rhythm guitar. And then Josh Monin, who lives in Sydney, Australia, plays bass.
Yeah.
But... You know, we fill that in when he's not around.
It's a long commute.
It's a really long commute. But I'm trying to do some other stuff on my own. Like, I listen to this Dylan LeBlanc. I listen to a lot of KEXP.
Sure.
It's where I get all of my new...
It's one of the great radio stations in the world.
Yeah, on the planet.
Yeah.
I get, like, all... Like KEXP and Shazam, like I'll be driving to work, like here's something, like Shazam it. Like my Shazam, I want to take my Shazam list and turn it into a playlist. It'd be epic because it's just like so many good. And like, and I'm really good, and the internet's really good at allowing me to go down rabbit holes.
Mm-hmm.
Once like KEXP will like just show you like, oh, look at this.
Yeah.
And then you like dig in, you start going in, and... KEXP and YouTube together that's like my video game. I can just do that for days. And Dylan LeBlanc did this thing at some studio in New York where it was him playing like a rhythm, like a nice foundation rhythm, nothing crazy, and singing. And then he had a violin and a cello player.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like...
Yeah.
I just had it on repeat for like a day. It's one song.
Yeah.
And that's, I kind of want to try to maybe do something like that. It just sounded so right to me.
Yeah.
Real like hear it and feel how it makes me feel. And that's kind of, that's my musical compass is if it feels and if it sounds one way and then feels that in that same vein, then it's right to me.
Yeah.
Like I don't know, like a good friend of mine who I played a lot of music with, Jake Blattner, is a super learned musician,
mm-hmm.
like jazz camp with his dad for as long as I can remember, and I've known him for like 20 years. And like, I'll write some stuff, or not write, because I don't, you know, make some stuff up, and he'll be like, that's not supposed to work, but don't stop doing it, because it works.
Sure.
And I don't know any different, you know? So I don't really know where I was going with that, but it's just, to the hearing it. And so if it sounds right to me, then I'm just going to go with it.
Yeah. So what's been the evolution? 10 years ago, this guy, Jamie Lynn, left you Les Paul or a Gold Top and a Jazzmaster, what was the next move after that? Once you decided, like, all right, this thing has legs.
Well, 2 weeks after starting, I wrote my first song.
All right, wow.
And I still play that song.
Like, damn.
Yeah. And I think it's good. I think it's good. I don't know if it is any good or not. Okay. But I like it.
Yeah.
And so I write a lot of songs. And that's, I wouldn't really consider myself a guitar player. I'm more of a singer-songwriter.
Sure.
Or maybe just a songwriter. I don't know. But I love it. And it's really, it's art to me. It's like, it's the first time with art that I've done where I now understand, like, you know, when artists are like, I didn't even know what I'm going to do. I just put the pen, sure. You know, and it's like, I've always been the guy that's like, bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, you don't tell me you don't know what you're doing or you're going to do. And then you got this huge, But now I can say, you know, I'm kind of that guy. Like, I'll just start fiddling around and then all of a sudden I'll come up with something. And then, you know, sometimes it's 2 minutes later I've got lyrics, or sometimes, like, I'm working on something right now where it's like, I'm now to the point where I'm trying to, like, make more intricate stuff,
mm-hmm.
Like bridges and then to the chorus and then maybe only a two-part bridge and then over here and back, but I still don't know what the hell I'm doing, you know? I'm just like, okay, let's try this.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm writing, and a lot of my stuff, I'm not like any weird political kind of dude, but like what I'm writing right now is kind of political because that's just what I'm seeing.
Of course.
Like the song I'm writing right now is kind of political. And it's not even political. It's more of a social thing, man. Like, really, what the hell are we doing as a country? Like, come on, guys. Like, snap out of it. Like,
yeah.
Whereas maybe 2 years ago, I would have just done, you know, verse, chorus. Now I'm like verse, bridge, chorus, verse, bridge,
yeah,
verse, you know, super change into something weird. And now I'm starting to, like, whereas before it was just like guitar, like rhythm guitar, like something that's a foundation, and then vocals.
Yeah.
And now I'm starting to think like, okay, rhythm, guitar, different parts, vocals, change that, pull something away, put something else in. So now I'm trying to start thinking about different instruments in there before, where I'd kind of just play my thing and then get other good musicians to be like, all right, man, like, I'll tell you if it's right. I don't know until I hear it. But now I'm trying to like put it all in my head together.
It's wild.
It's a little weird, man.
Is it, you feel like it's just flowing out of you because you don't have expectations or you're not like self-critical, like if you tried to write a hip hop song back in the day, or, you know, is it just like you're going with it?
Yeah, I don't know that. And like, I'll be like, wow, that sucked. You know, so I can't say that I'm
not do that,
self-critical, but, the whole don't have any expectations. I mean, everybody has expectations of some point, of some sort. I just want to make something that I feel sounds good.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, if nobody else likes it, well, nobody else likes it.
Yeah.
If a gazillion people like it, well, a gazillion people like it.
Sure.
And then we'll deal with those challenges if and when they arrive. But, you know, it's music. It's beautiful. It's freeing. It's, for me, it's honest, and I think a lot of popular music these days isn't.
No,
honest,
yeah.
And it's important to me to just make something that either makes people think or makes them smile, and always makes them bob their head.
Yeah,
that's it. Like, that's.
So what, when you were starting out, did you go buy an acoustic right away, or did you stick with the electric for a while?
I actually got lucky and had a buddy of mine who was sponsored by Fender.
Okay.
They sent me.
Those are good buddies to have.
Yeah, they sent me. I'm actually still playing one of the guitars that they had sent me. My Jazzmaster. And so they sent me Strat and an acoustic guitar and one of those Mustang 3, like with all the modeling in it. And so I just sat in my house for like a year with those. And the acoustic guitar was okay. The electric guitar is nice. But like I said, I hear things. Like, I don't know if I've got really good hearing or just really weird hearing, but I know right away if I'm,
yeah,
or yes.
Yeah.
And so like the electric guitar, I was like, yes. But the acoustic guitar just didn't, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a great guitar. It just wasn't for me. Like, this is, I'm on guitar number 3 from Breedlove. Like,
How did the Breedlove, I mean, they're kind of in a ski town. Is that, was yeah, that, did that, that have anything to do with it?
Well, there's a guy, Colin, who is their sales guy.
Okay.
Who is a snowboarder and used to be in the snowboard industry. And we played a benefit show last year at the Dirksen Derby, which is a contest down in Bend, right before Christmas. And he showed up and was like, what? Like, I didn't know. And I was like, yeah, I don't really talk too much about, And he's like, well, I need to hook you up with the guy here. You need to be playing our stuff. Like, we're super hyped.
Yeah.
And I went down a couple months ago and hung out with the RA, with Ra Beatty. It's like the head marketing dude there and his wife and his kid. And we played music and they gave me the tour and they sat me down in front of all these guitars and I kind of played them. And it, guitars are funny, man. The one that I had before this was Indian Rosewood. And as far as just like guitar tone, it was the best sounding guitar I've ever heard.
Sure.
Like, hands down. But it, the pitch was a little high for my voice.
Oh, yeah.
So I started singing a little bit high, and then I was like, I can't.
Yeah.
I was like, I sent him a message. I was like, hey, man, if I didn't ever sing, I would never put this thing down, but I need something that's a little bit lower, and I'm not smart enough to know, like, do I just add baritone strings? Does that fuck it up? What do I do?
Yeah.
So I was just, and originally the Myrtlewood thing kind of plays into my whole Northwest guy, and like, so.
It is from that. So describe this guitar for folks who can't see it.
It is a what is known as the concertina size. So it's the small one. And it's all myrtle wood, which is wood that's sourced from the Oregon coast, from fallen. So it's like super yay environment kind of thing, which I'm, you know, I'm pretty much about.
Yeah.
And it's, Breedlove has this thing where their tones, it's not like where Taylors are really ting, 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 like more of a higher thing to me.
Sure.
And Martins are kind of in the, like, kind of lower. And Gibsons are just Gibsons. Like,
yeah,
a really nice Gibson, like a Hummingbird is a beautiful guitar. But these things are just so even and thought out. And, like, when you play them, it's like, it's just, it's like honey to me. It's like warm honey.
Yeah.
So I enjoy it. It's not, I don't know if that one right there is the end one.
Okay.
And I don't know if that's my, let's call it the Willie Nelson. I don't know if that's my Willie Nelson.
All right.
But it's damn close and it sounds really nice.
It sounds like you're songwriting all the time. Are you playing out much? Or you got to wait for the guy from Australia to
show
up,
no,
right?
Well, no, I play a lot of, I did a few years ago when I wasn't working as much, played. Like, I worked with the Waterfront Seattle thing just to kind of get in front of faces and, like, lose that whole weird stage thing. But I recently played at Slim's Last Chance Saloon.
Sure.
Which was a little weird for me. It, like, really wasn't my crowd, but my friend was doing it, and she asked me, hey, would you please come play? And, like, full circle, Mark Yalowitz was, like, the headline. I mean, and he's just, like, full, you know, Yngwie kind of, and I was just like, oh, here we go.
Well, you're opening for that guy though, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to go after that.
No. Yeah. I went right before him, which was great. And surprisingly, I played like two or three songs. It was like a bunch of people.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, I got a good response. Yeah. So I was terrified, and I'm never terrified.
Like, yeah, you've been in like huge competitions.
Yeah, like I'm like, all right, well, yeah. You know what? It's either going to be good or bad. And yeah. Usually by the first chord, I'm like, all right, we're in it now. But yeah. The whole time, it just was not my crowd. God bless them, because they're super punk rock people.
Yeah.
Like, and they're like just grizzly punk rockers.
Yeah.
Just not my thing. I'm down for it, and I love all that music, but...
You're trying to bring a cello into the equation.
Which,
you're trying to bring a cello.
I'm trying to bring a cello, you know, into this equation. You know, and coming from the world of 90s hip hop, there's a lot of remixing going on.
Yeah.
So like, I'm trying to figure out which of, I've got probably, I don't know, 30 songs.
Wow.
And we just got out of, we were down at Toad House Studios in June. And okay. We recorded 5. So
that was with the band from
with the band.
Okay. What's going to happen with that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Demo, EP, I don't know. Something. We need to get it done.
What kind of music is that for?
Yeah.
What's the band? I mean,
it's like folky, rocky.
Okay. What's the name of them?
Shout the People.
Shout the People. Okay.
Which is I got it from like when you see the old movies with the old black churches and the people are, oh,
yeah.
It's called Shouting the People. Yeah. So like that's our thing. That's what we strive for.
Yeah.
To have people.
Revival.
Yeah. Just have people hyped and smiling and dancing and
yeah.
Good times.
So you got that going on, and then you got the solo thing potentially going on.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's tough. Like it took, Mikey and I have been playing music together pretty much since I started playing music. And it took us until last year to find a drummer. Like drummers are, it's just, I didn't know. Yeah. I didn't know.
Yeah.
Now I know. It's really tough to find a drummer that fits.
Yeah.
I played with one guy who like I show up at his house and he puts one of those masks on his face. Like one of those.
Okay.
With like the
surgical
mask? Hannibal.
Oh, really?
Lecter kind of like, it's just like one of those, like the old tactical mask where they can't see your face and you can put goggles over
yeah.
it, like one of those. And it's got like fangs on it and he's got a bottle of vodka right there. And I was just like, oh boy. And he's just.
Where'd you find that guy?
Through another friend. Who. And then another guy, I go to his studio. And I'm friends with the other guy. He's rad, dude. He plays like Brazilian cat. He plays like Brazilian metal, like metal.
Yeah.
And he's just got a drum kit that's like 750 pieces with 36 cymbals. And he's just crushing it. And it's just, and he's like, I hope your amp's loud because I play loud. And then he's like, I can't hear you guys. I'm like, well, why don't you like chill out on the cymbals? And he looked at me crazy as hell, and I was like, okay, well, this one's not going to, you know. Wow. So.
You're like, I'm too old for this shit.
It just, you know, like I said, I hear something, and I know if yeah. it's a red light or a green light.
Yeah.
Within seconds.
Sure.
And it's not to anybody's talent. It has nothing to do with that. You could probably be the worst drummer in the world, and if you hit the, if you're on the beat that I wanted that clicked my brain green mm-hmm. light, then you're in.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably not going to happen because if you're the worst drummer in the world, you probably can't keep beat. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So.
Are you intuitive like that about all sorts of shit, like snowboards and everything?
Yeah. That's right. The way I run it. All
right. Cool, man.
Yeah.
So what's next? You got this demo going on. Are you still snowboarding?
Yeah, I am.
Not competing. Or are you competing?
A little bit. Okay. Old man stuff.
Old man. I didn't even know there was a circuit.
It's not really a circuit. It's just a couple contests that pop up that we all show up at. And
got it.
So there's every year there's like the Mount Baker Banked Slalom and the Dirksen Derby. And then there's like Bodie Merrill, who's a know, big time pro these days, puts on like a mini half pipe event, which is just like a normal half pipe for me from the 90s.
Yeah.
And that's super fun.
Yeah.
You know, so there's stuff like that. And then do tour. I think I'm going to go and do some stuff out there.
Yeah.
This year, I'm not sure. I've been talking to Snowboarder Mag a little bit about that.
You've got a signature model snowboard still.
I do.
Or it came back. Well, it was reissued, right?
Well, it wasn't. So what happened was about 5 years ago, when I was snowboarding, you designed your pro model. Like, it was part of, like,
the construction, the graphics, everything.
Yeah, all of it.
Yeah.
And so, like, I've had, like, all these boards that are coming out. They're like, yeah, these are great, but it's not really what I want to ride. And so I found on Instagram this company called Offshore out of Japan.
Okay.
And I was like, So I sent the dude an email. Like, hey, man, how much would you charge me to build me a custom, like, I don't want your shape. I want, like, a full custom, I'll design it, snowboard. Like, yeah. I'll give you whatever you want. And he was like, are you Russell Winfield? I was like, yeah, whatever.
You're big in Japan.
I'm huge in Japan.
You are, uh-huh.
He's actually an Australian guy.
Oh, okay.
But he's a late, mid-30s guy
who
grew up watching me snowboard.
Sure.
Amongst other people, not just me.
Yeah. But,
and he's like, how about if we just work on it together and put a board out under Offshore and we'll go from there? And I was like, sounds great to me. It sounds way cheaper. I'm in.
Yeah.
So I ended up, they flew me over there to the factory. They had just finished it, building the factory. And so I brought in this guy, Paul McGinty, with me, who is by trade an actual rocket scientist.
Okay.
From Wales.
Okay.
Yeah, but he's worked in the snowboard industry. He's that guy. He just loves snowboarding, and he did a bunch. He worked at Ride and K2 for years, and that's where I met him. And I've always, like, his technical side works with my creative and shape style. So, like, it's one thing to be able to design a shape that works, and understand how you want your flex pattern and where you want it, you know, where you want your flex and how you want your side cut.
Yeah.
But it's another thing to, like, understand construction and different parts of the layup of a snowboard. And so he's come up with all these different things that he puts into snowboards in order for them to combat issues that they have, like, so you don't go over the nose, or so that, you know, it lands better, or it snaps better when you're ollieing, or, you know, it holds an edge better. And so we were able to take all those technologies that he had and put them in to our snowboards, and I think they're amazing. I think they're the best on the planet.
Yeah.
He's super high end. All the materials, it's like the guitar I play or the golf clubs I play. It's like super high end, well thought out, well made stuff.
And do you order these straight from Japan, or how do folks get them?
Yeah, you order them. We tried to go into retail, but it's a really difficult industry right now.
It's so like we're guitars.
So we're just pretty much direct.
What do they sell for?
They're about $1,000.
Okay. Just like on the high end for a snowboard?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's ones that cost more that aren't as nice, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Just because they're not handmade in Japan, in a factory that's owned by the company. You know, like, I can walk out of the factory, walk up like 200 yards, hop on a lift, ride up the lift, ride powder all the way down, back into the factory. You know, that's for the win for me. Like, that's being about it. Like,
yeah. So do you for business, have to be there a couple times a year?
I go, like, once every other year.
Okay.
Japan, it's so far, and I mean, I live here, man.
Yeah.
It's really tough to get better. For me,
and
what I like, it's tough to get better snow than here.
Yeah.
Like, everybody's like, Utah, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, nah, I'm good. I just like Washington.
So do you have the intuitiveness about guitar shapes? Do you have a vision for, like, a custom guitar one day, or is this it?
I think it's more materials than shape.
Mm-hmm.
For me, because, I mean, guitar shape's a guitar shape.
Yeah.
everybody tries to do weird stuff and they just look funny. I think a guitar is beautiful just the way it is. Looks like a woman to me.
Yeah.
And I think what change, I'm not, and you don't really, I don't know. I think it's just materials. I like to mess around with, I mean, in what better place than Breedlove? They've got every single wood that you've ever thought of and a few that you didn't even know were there.
Yeah.
So I'd like to mess around a bit with the woods for tones. Maybe shape. I don't know. I need to really go back down there and spend like a week and sit down with those guys. But their process is crazy. Have you been down and seen them shaving everything doing with the...
giant warehouse of Brazilian down the street. It's insane.
Yeah, they're really doing it over there, which is great. I'm happy. And I don't know that they want to be like the big box.
No, they've got their spot, you know, and it's pretty cool. There's always been that connection, you know, I don't know if it started with John Denver or what, but like between mountains and like guitar makers, you know, it's, and guitars in general, right? Like, so much of like the bluegrass scene started in Colorado and like, you know,
it did, huh?
Yeah. Like some, like the modern, you know, the 60s guys, like they were all hippies going to
UC Boulder,
wherever.
Down south or something.
Yeah. I don't know. Everybody ends up in Aspen or Telluride or whatever and forms a bluegrass band. I don't know. So, yeah.
Interesting.
Well, cool, Russell. Thanks for coming here.
Thank you for having me.
This was a lot of fun. The guitar is beautiful.
Thank you.